In a dull season in the league, it's the quarterfinals of the FA Cup for Reading. Is this season possibly going to lead to some glory out of absolutely nowhere? Speaking of glory out of absolutely nowhere, we've reached 50 episodes. This is the Tile Less Than podcast, episode 50. My name is Dan Wimbush. Thanks very much for taking the time to download and listen to the show, whether this is your first or your 50th. Very much appreciated. And I am joined, as always, by two men that have been here for just about nearly 50 episodes each themselves. Mr. Alan West, Alexander Westy. Westy, hello.
Hello, everyone.
And Tile Less Than deputy editor, Johnny Williams. Johnny, hello.
Good evening. Although Westy is experienced from the old Reading podcast as well.
Yeah, so. About 200.
So, you know, it's like history. It only starts at number one.
That's it. Yeah,
he's... The past is forgotten.
He is racking them up. And we are joined for a fourth Tile Less Than podcast appearance by Dave Harris, who's in his handbags. Handbags, hello.
Hello.
You are lucky charm as of late. We all seem to be talking to you after an FA Cup win. This time around, it's a 2-1 win at Derby. And it comes off the back of probably one of the worst games of the season, which in turn came off one of the best games of the season. Gentlemen, which is the real Reading Football Club at the moment? Because I've got absolutely no idea.
You know what? I think it's the inconsistency that we used to see sort of under the Nigel Adkins team, where they, you know, they put together a decent performance against sort of a lower league side, and then the next week you'd sort of think, well, what is going on here? I think it's just something you've got to deal with as a Reading fan. The fact that, look, everything went completely wrong against Leeds, but you look at the Wolves win and you look at the Derby win, admittedly against 10 men there. And I do think that this Reading side has ability in it. It's just not in a position where those players can put it in, week out.
I think we're better suited to playing away from home, quite clearly.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you watch Leeds on Tuesday night, they sat in and they waited for Reading to make mistakes, and we did. And to be fair, if they've had a striker, well, they'd probably beat us 3 or 4 by the end of the match.
Yeah, quite. It's fairly evident that Clark has introduced a counter-attacking style, which is always going to be lend itself to playing away from home, isn't it? It is what it is.
It was quite telling this week. I don't know if anyone see the interview with Steve Clark, and he said that he's tried to play two different systems, but the players have struggled with one, where they're coping pretty well with the other. So he's obviously trying to move us into different ways of playing, but for the moment the team have got one way, and that's successful, but it's normally successful away from home.
That does worry me slightly, because our former manager did that, didn't he? He liked to chop and change.
Yeah. Mm. No, it's just saying systems he's on about. Obviously, we tried to play three in midfield this week, and we didn't create anything, did we, going forward?
No.
We didn't hassle, we didn't give him any problems.
We always make the argument that, I mean, you look at it on the face of it, and Leeds are a team that are below us on the table. Admittedly, they've been in some decent form after a few bad results. I think they changed their manager. But you still sort of think 4-4-2 at home, go out and attack them, try and dominate the game. And it very much looked like we were, you know, trying to counteract them rather than imposing ourselves on the game. And ultimately, that just didn't work. Whereas, as we've said, we should be beaten away from home. I mean, we are unbeaten except for the Fulham game, where that was cruel that we lost it in the final minute, to be honest. And I think, you know, this Reading team is better away from home because they can set up to counter-attack, as you say, with the pace from the wings.
What was the best performance of the week, Dave? The one at Wolves or the one at Derby?
The one at Wolves. The one at Wolves by a long way. They're a playoff-chasing team, and they barely had a sniff. They had a short five-minute spell in the first half in which they got their equaliser. They had cleared off the line. But otherwise, they created very, very little. We nullified their threats, which are clearly down the wings. And essentially should have won by a much more comfortable margin than the scoreline suggests.
And we're proving we can mix it with teams way above us as well, which is a good sign.
Well, that's just it. It did lift expectation. You did see a few murmurs going around on Twitter of people saying, oh, can we make that late playoff dash and things like that? And obviously it all comes crashing down on Tuesday night. We've mentioned it a few times, but Westy, for you, was that the worst you've seen in Reading this year?
It was poor. Again, we created absolutely nothing, and we gifted them chances, and you're always going to get beat when you do that. The only thing I would say about it is their goal come out of absolutely nothing, but we had no reply after that. But what annoys me the most is when you watch these sort of games, when you think, well, this is pretty turgid, nothing's happening here, and then the last 10 minutes, all of a sudden there's this big push to score a goal. You think, why can't you do that during the match? Why do you have to leave it till that late? So it was a poor performance.
Johnny, why do you think Steve Clark tinkered with it? Why do you think he took... Because obviously going to Wolves, I don't think many of us thought they'd go 4-4-2, because the natural thing to do, stick another man in the midfield, bring Norwood in or Rakpan or whoever. And then at home, you stick the extra striker in. But Clark went the opposite way. Played the extra striker up at Wolves, paid off. Played the extra midfield against Leeds, didn't pay off at all. Do you agree with this tinkering and experimenting, or do you think, you stick your best team out every week?
You ask the question, why did Steve Clark do it? I honestly don't have an answer for you. I do not know why he changed it, because you see that, you know, we get a brilliant performance away at Wolves and then completely, you know, as you said, completely turgid against Leeds and we didn't create a chance at all. I honestly do not know why he changed anything up, and especially his substitutions as well. I mean, by the end, we were just lumping it forward, and you take off the two players that can win a header in the air, Nick Blackman and Pog, and you bring on Simon Cox and
Mackie
and Yakubu as well. And, you know, Yakubu's under 6 foot as well. So you brought on three players who are not going to have a chance in the air. And we know that when you're 1-0 down chasing the game, all you're doing is lumping the ball forward as well. It was just, it was a very strange game. I mean, a lot of our home games have sort of been get to 0-0 at half-time. And I think we had a period of that under McDermott as well. Get to 0-0 at half-time and try and get something in the second half, try and impose your will. But there was just nothing there. And it was very frustrating, especially after seeing that performance on Saturday night against Wolves. You thought, oh, maybe we're going somewhere. And I think it just brought a lot of Reading fans back down to earth. And, you know, we're, yeah,
just a bit.
We are that sort of team that's going to get pull out a result and then, you know, crash down the next week.
It is probably a good thing that it happened in many ways, simply to bring everybody's expectation levels down. But at the same time, it was incredibly disappointing because Leeds were not a very good side.
No, it wasn't the first Seaton by a much better side.
They were a functional side. They had no real standout qualities. They've scored one with, you know, just as was mentioned before, just out of the blue. Nobody really expected him to shoot from there. At least of all Federici, clearly.
It's like, poor goalkeeping, or do you blame the deflection bobble?
It's nobody's expected. I can't really see as, you know, if everybody's ever played in goal, a lot of it is based on anticipation, and nobody anticipated the chap score or even shooting
Murphy,
there.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, all right, he's caught a little bit flat-footed. He should have been on his toes, but at the same time, if you're not anticipating it, you're going to struggle to get there in many ways, I think. And then, of course, the second one was just, yeah.
Question for all of you guys then. Are you happy to see Steve Clarke tinker at this stage? With relegation, not obviously it's not mathematically safe, it's 7 points or whatnot, but are you happy for him to have a look, proper look at his squad this season, try different things out, or do you want to see him best team every single week, trying to get that win and try and build some momentum? Which sort of school of thought do you fall into? Westy, I'll start with you.
Well, I think for a manager who's just come into the club, he needs to see what they can do or what the players he's got available to him are capable of. The only way you're going to learn that is to try different things. I think the reason he packed the midfield is because he thought Leeds were going to pack the midfield and he didn't want to lose that battle. In the end, we lost it anyway. But I think going forward, you'll see Cox play a lot more up front because it seems to work better with Cox.
Johnny, tinker or stick?
I like the fact that he tinkers, and it seems to be for a tactical reason rather than just a standard rotation that you see or putting someone else in to give someone a rest, etc. But you know, I sort of liken it to the contract situation in the fact that we've said with the contracts that we're not going to offer any new ones to any new players until it's mathematically safe. And I guess he just wants to, in the same sort of way, just sort of experiment with things and see which players are up to it. And you've seen that he's rotated in the wings, in the right back and left back, etc. And I guess he wants to see what he's got at his disposal. Like you say, I don't think we're in a danger of relegation necessarily, but he wants to give everyone a chance. And, you know, the fact that he hasn't thrown Yakubu in straight away, despite him being, you know, a new high-profile signing, I think says, look, you've got to earn your place. So I think at the moment he's just trying to give everyone a chance and make sure that they can do a job.
Dave, what about you?
Stick. Yep, definitely a stick. I think you know why change a winning team? You've got to, you know, we're not safe from relegation yet. We've only got to get sort of 3 or 4 defeats on the trot, which is innately possible, and we're suddenly in trouble again. But at the moment we're playing on the whole generally really quite well. And it's working, which is, as I say, it's just made it even more bizarre that he actually changed the team on Tuesday night.
Okay.
And it worked incredibly well against Wolves.
Yeah, well, he went back to that 4-4-2 for the game at Derby on Saturday. A game that, I mean, me and Charles were talking about it in the podcast extra on Friday. Charles actually correctly predicting a 2-1 win.
What, to Reading?
He did.
The only bloody person who did.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, Charles, it doesn't count in the prediction league, so sorry about that. I went for a draw. I thought, again, this whole competition is played into Reading's hands because Championship sides, when you're playing another Championship side at home, you do let your guard down a bit. And McLaren changed his team around. It is hard to get yourself pumped up for a visit of a lower, you know, bottom half Championship team. And Reading caught them cold. Yeah, they got you know, a bit of fortune, if you want to call it that, by Stephen Warnock getting sent off. But they did their jobs very well. And Dave, worthy winners for you?
In the end, I think so. I mean, Derby still looked more than a threat, even with 10 men. They were very much in the game. So it was hardly a walkover. But we created better chances overall throughout. These 10 managed to tuck a couple away and walked away with place in the quarterfinal. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Reading could have even had the lead in the first half as well. A big penalty shout turned down for you with a handball. Was it handball for you, Johnny? Penalty? Yes,
absolutely.
Westy?
It's blatant. If you've got a shot on target and someone gets their hand to it, that's a penalty.
I think John described it as in our match report, he described it as a Superman dive. It wasn't quite that, but it was.
He's not looking at the ball, but he's lifted his hands. And if you've got a shot on target and someone puts their hand to it, I think that's a penalty every day of the week.
They see them give them all the time, don't you? No, even though we were in a completely opposite corner of the ground, it was as blatant a handball as you'd ever see. And the only reason I can think the referee hasn't given it is because he's suddenly the pantomime villain along with Jamie Mackin, because 2 minutes previous he'd sent Stephen Warnock off.
Yeah, unfortunately, that shouldn't make a difference, though.
It shouldn't make a difference. No, but it does. It does. And you know, say, after that sending off, we didn't actually get anything for about an hour afterwards. Everything was going generally in Derby's favour, literally everything. I mean, there was a very clear penalty shout in the second half when Nick Blackman had his shorts taken down to his ankles. and we didn't get that. It's a clear penalty. And it was clear as day.
Johnny, we've done 50 episodes of this podcast now, and I think if we did some analytical research into the player we've mentioned the most, I think Hal Robson-Kanu would be very near the top, if not the top.
Yeah.
Yesterday was possibly, I don't think there's a possibility about it, Hal Robson-Kanu's best performance of the season, scores one, creates another. Why on earth do we not see more of this Robson-Kanu?
Well, I don't know whether he thought it was on TV or not, because he thought FA Cup eight ties. Maybe
Derby's not in Wales either, which is a funny one.
But no, you know, a great finish from him and a great through ball as well for Yakubu's goal as well. I mean, as we constantly say on this podcast, he has the ability. It's just the frustration that he can't do it constantly. But in the last couple of podcasts, I've sort of stuck up for him and said not every player does it consistently either. You know, you can't expect every single player to put a 7 or 8 out of 10 game together week in, week out. And, you know, Hal put it together yesterday, a cracking finish for the first. And he's playing for a new contract. Maybe that has something to do with it as well. I think, you know, he's got the ability and he can definitely try and turn it around in the next few weeks, hopefully.
I think what helped yesterday was the fact that it was a very open game as well. So attacking players were always going to get a little bit of space to play in. And Hal exploited it to the best of his ability, incredibly well, which can't be said for his opposite number on the opposite flank, Mr. Mackie, who had a little bit of a stinker in the second half in particular. I think he had one touch.
Yeah, you can never fault Jamie Mackie for his effort, but I think he's shown over the course of the season that he's not. Well, you can see why he's been moved on for a few clubs. Yeah. He gives it everything he's got, but he's lacking that little touch of quality at the end. And I thought Reading were really going to miss Gareth McCleary yesterday. I mean, thankful obviously they got the result in the end. But just on mentioning McCleary, you've been not his biggest fan since come back from injury, Johnny.
Not necessarily his biggest fan, but just it's sort of an argument amongst Reading fans that they look at Hal Robson-Kanu and Nick Blackman I pick on those two players because they are the ones that are sort of like fans see them negatively and they pick up.
They get the booze.
They get the booze. They get the negative sort of vibes. Whereas McCleary is, he's a fan favourite. You know, he runs a lot and he's an exciting player. But when you look at their sort of end product, especially in the last couple of games, they've both been pretty much the same. It's just the attitude you have with certain players. Like, you know, we used to say about Jimmy Kempe, he's an exciting player. He always sort of got you going as a fan. And McCleary's a similar sort of player as that. But in my opinion, McCleary's been no better than Kanu or Blackman in the last couple of games, and yet he's sort of, aside from any of that criticism that is relayed upon Kanu and Blackman, because as you say, those are the two players
they're similar type players. They're very similar. They're skillful, but sometimes it looks like they do try and do too much or don't do enough. Whereas McCleary's got pace. It's a bit like Jukesy used to play for Reading.
We say he's got pace, but we say about Mackie, he's got no end product.
No, he hasn't got no end product.
I mean, I look back to the Sheffield Wednesday game, about a month ago. McCleary must have put in, 25, 30 crosses? One found its man, Chalobah.
Yeah.
Kelly put in one or two crosses in that game, and he found his man, Pogrebny.
No, he did, yeah. But it's the little bits for Mackie you get, where he put a ball through that mate's legs, and then he skinned him alive, and then he crossed the ball in with score, right?
Yeah.
It's that bit people remember. They don't remember the 20 ones he put into the stand. A bit like Jilksy, you'd see him come up against three players, he'd knock it past them, he'd go zooming past, everyone was excited, then you boot it into the stand. Everyone forgets about that, you know?
Right, well, we'll come on to Nick Blackman a little bit later in pub chat, but just before we wrap this up then, there's only one place to end this. The Yak. He's been fed. He scored the goal. Westie, is this the start of a wonderful spell at Reading for your QB? What have you made of him in his 40-odd minutes so far?
Well, his appearance at Leeds was, quite uneventful, really, because he broke his nose and we didn't see him for ages, and he came back on and done nothing. But he showed a few nice little touches, these little balls he slotted inside for players that they probably didn't get because they didn't understand what's going to happen. But I think yesterday, from your QB, you see what a proper top striker's all about, because he got into the space and he was already running. Whereas you see Paul Grebinac talking about off air, when Paul Grebinac's in that sort of position against two defenders, he tends to come to the ball. Whereas Yakubu, see the opportunity straight away. He thought, if I can get running, I can get clear. And that's what he'd done. And as soon as he had opportunity, the ball ended up in the back of the net.
Yeah, and it's like Jason Roberts. I mean, Jason Roberts was not quick, but he wasn't slow either. But he had that anticipation, yeah, and get into those right areas. And to have someone with that nous, it's great. I mean, Lafondre had it to a certain extent. That's how he ended up with 10, 15 goals a season. But Brennan have been missing that since he's gone.
And also, Yakubu, a bit like Roberts, he doesn't have to be particularly quick because he's strong and you can't get a ball off him. And he gets himself into a position where you can't get around him like he did for the goal this week.
Do you think he could play with Pogrebniak, Dave?
I was hoping he would do, to be perfectly honest with you. I think that they're two very very different strikers in many ways.
So, they are.
Pogrebniak is very much the hold-up and come short type player, and Yakubu is the one who's on the shoulder of the last defender. Absolutely, they can play together, and they're quality strikers.
Simon Cox, on the other hand, he's not having the best of time in front of goal at the moment, is he? Well, I know he was dropped for the game against Leeds midweek, came off the bench, but he missed a few chances against Derby yesterday. And I don't know how I'm feeling about Simon Cox in his time at Reading, because he started like a house on fire, got himself 6-7 goals, but since I think he's got one since November.
We sort of speculated when Steve Clarke went at West Brom. I mean, it might just be coincidence, but about a month after that, Simon Cox was shipped out on loan. So you don't know whether it's Steve Clarke. I mean, you know, obviously he's happy to play him because he's putting him in the team, but he is sort of snatching at chances, and we always say that, you know, it's all about confidence as a striker, but you see the Derby highlights. He has two or three golden chances. I mean, one drops to him sort of 12 yards out and he blazes it over. Hopefully it's just a confidence thing, because we know he's a great finisher. He scored from inside the box, he scored from outside the box. But with that pressure of Yakubu, who's obviously grabbed the goal, and Pogrebniak, who you'd imagine is still the number one striker in terms of everything he can do, it's a bit of a worrying time for Simon Cox, but hopefully he can step up to the plate and, you know, turn his game around.
The great thing is, you look at Reading at the moment in that squad, you've got three strikers there that have all scored goals in the Premier League. You can't say that about a lot of other Championship sides.
Simon Cox scored one goal in the Premier League.
No, he's scored more than that, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's scored loads in the Premier League.
Yeah, I remember him scoring an absolute worldie against Spurs on the last day of the season.
Yeah, he scored quite a few for West Brom in the Premier League. But still, he's played in the Premier League. He's done it. He scored goals. I think they all offer you something different, and I think that's a good thing.
Right, so into the quarterfinals we'll go, and we'll detail the big details for that quarterfinal draw in just a moment in News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Right, welcome back to News Bites. We'll start News Bites with a correction. We owe Johnny Williams an apology. Simon Cox has actually only scored one in the Premier League, and that was that wonder goal against Tottenham. So there you go, two seasons in the Premier League.
But it was a good goal.
But he has scored goal in the Premier League.
He has scored goal. Yeah. He scored a few in the Cup. He got eight in those two Premier League seasons with West Brom, seven of them coming in the Cup.
Who were they against?
I have absolutely no idea. Do you want us to take another break?
we'll
stick with it. Right, the most important thing for News Bites is Reading are in the draw. Unfortunately, due to my crazy working schedule, we can't do a podcast Monday night.
And, I enjoyed that live blog. I enjoyed listening it back. It was a bit more, well, I thought as it was going on, it was a bit boring, but it actually sounded all right.
Given who we drew, though, it's probably not the best thing that we go and do the show again. But
So have a guess who we're going to get?
Well, we will in a second. I'll just run through. Obviously, Reading into that draw, we will be number seven.
Lucky seven.
It's never lucky for me in the casino, but that's a different gamble-aware story. Mm. The teams currently in the quarterfinals are Liverpool, Arsenal, Aston Villa, West Brom, Bradford, Blackburn, Reading, and Preston North End or Manchester United. Gentlemen, we've got quite a few questions in the mailbag about who do you want in the draw, but I'm just going to throw them out here. Who do you want in that draw tomorrow?
Everyone's going to want Bradford, aren't they?
Yeah, it's got to be Bradford, isn't it?
Home or away?
Again. I think
away. I think we're better suited to an away. Well, as we spoke about earlier, we're better suited to playing away. And I think we could be the team to do them because they play to our strengths, as it were, with the two big men up front, John Stead and James Hansen. And I think there would be a real possibility.
Has John Stead got a bit of a hoodoo against?
Yeah, right? John Stead tends to play pretty well when he plays against
him. I remember scoring an equaliser when we were under Rodgers for Ipswich or something like that.
He's a good player, John Stead, actually. When you watch him the other week in the Cup, some nice touches. He gives teams all sorts of trouble.
The bookies have surely got to put money on Reading drawing Blackburn away, given our previous record of drawing Championship sides away in the Cup. But for me, the only two ties that would really send fear into me is getting one of us, well, three.
Yeah.
Getting their big clubs, Arsenal, Liverpool, Man United away. I know we won at Anfield a couple of years ago and we've taken United close, but
they're beast now, aren't they?
Once you get to this stage, it's less about drawing a big team, going to a nice place,
you want
to
win it,
and more about let's get to Wembley.
Yeah, which is exactly what I said in the last one. When we drew Derby away, people were very disappointed with it. But you know, what do you want? You want to get the best possible opportunity to get through.
Yeah, I'll take Blackburn or Bradford at home.
I'd like Villa at home just to exercise some demons.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
That would be really nice.
Let's get Villa at home.
Tim Sherwood, new manager effect.
Well, they say that about the new manager effect today, but he was just sat in the stands and didn't do anything.
Well, as I said, as long as you don't get a big team away, I'm happy about it. Although I am in the dilemma, as I've mentioned on this previous podcast, I'm getting married on April the 18th. The day of one of the two FA Cup semi-finals. So destiny would dictate that obviously we're going to make it.
It's a coin flip then, isn't it?
Yeah, whether we get the...
Have your fingers crossed.
Yeah, that we get the game on the Sunday.
So we're saying Villa at home.
I'd hate Villa at home.
Oh, I think we get Villa at home.
Okay, your prediction then. Is that who you're predicting we'll get?
Yeah, Villa at home? West Brom in the semis.
Right. Johnny?
Oh, I can't predict Villa at home as well.
You can if you want
to. I'll go West Brom at home.
Dave?
Let's go Bradford away. I'm saying we'll get
drawn at the Emirates.
Yeah, well, that's 50%
the ultimate nightmare.
Yeah. Comfy seats.
We have only ever known defeat against
Arsenal. Yeah, that's against Stephen Kelly. You'll enjoy that battle, won't you?
To be fair, we should have had him a couple of years ago, but the less said about 7-5, the better. Right,
I think what would be nice before we move on is if all the Premier League teams got each other again.
After 90 minutes, that was 4-4, so does that count as a draw?
We were robbed, to be fair, that game as well.
Yeah, the ref. Even though we were 4-0 up, didn't he?
I blame Simon Church. Easy to do. Right, other news. Other good cup news. The under-21s, Reading under-21 sides are in the semi-finals of the Premier League Cup, that competition they won last year. So they're just a couple of games away from winning it again. They'll face Blackburn, who Reading could get in the FA Cup as well. They'll face Blackburn away in the semi-finals, and that's on the 26th of February. So hopefully under-21s could pull off another win. Always nice to see them doing well. They've had a few more players drop back down now, obviously, with all the first senior players fit, so...
You know what they should do? They should do it. If it ends up we get Blackburn, they should like a double header. They should play them in the morning and us in the afternoon. Make a fortune.
Yeah, exactly. That's at the Lee Valley Sports Village at 7 o'clock kickoff. I don't know how many law rules will travel down to that. But,
I don't know how many people live in that village either.
No, who knows? Right, anyway, so that is best of luck to the under-21. So we'll report on that after that happens. And finally, a bit of news. The Tullhurst End Player of the Month, Johnny. By
Adam Federici with his second, I believe, of the season. Norwood and Federici pretty much dominated.
I think they've taken five out of 6 months, haven't they?
Yeah, the last 4 or 5 months have just been Federici and Norwood completely dominating. But he took 52%. Pogge with a couple of decent performances on 23%. McCleary, again, just coming back into the side and working his way in, 14%. And Oliver Norwood only settling for fourth in the end.
Oliver Norwood, Dave, he was probably the shining light under Nigel Atkins this season. But since Steve Clark's gone in, he's not performed so well.
No, he hasn't, has he? He's not been anywhere near as effective. I think that again, it all comes down to the style of play, doesn't it? Atkins liked to play through midfield and it suited Norwood down to the ground with more of a counter-attacking style. He's been dropped to the bench recently and with I think Chalobah and Williams in the holding positions. He came back in for the Leeds game and was pretty damn woeful, really, wasn't he?
Yeah, even his passing, which is usually the one thing you can count on him for, was a bit
wayward. Well, it's best through ball of the game he played to the Leeds.
Oh, that was brilliant. Chance in the first half.
Westy.
There were a couple of strange moments in that game where Norwood was sort of in the hole between the midfield and the attack, and he got the ball sort of 25 yards out, just outside the area. And instead of sort of turning and looking for the shot, he was instantly looking for the pass. And I think that's what you see from Oliver Norwood. He doesn't have that experience of being so far forward that he can, you know, turn and take a shot or play a through ball to a striker. He's very much a distributor from the back. And I think Steve Clarke tends to prefer more of an engine room. And that's why you see Williams and Chalobah, who we know are two more sort of hustle and bustle midfielders, a lot more stamina, a lot athletic, more energy. Yeah.
Federici, though, deserve...
Yeah, he does. He's been very good recently. As much as it pains me to say it, he's been excellent. And the thing, even this week against Derby, I mean, he made two or three brilliant saves at the start of the game. And he's doing his job well at the moment.
That goal against Leeds, probably his first mistake of the season, really.
Yeah. And again, it was an absolute bolt out of the blue. Mm. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you can call it a mistake from him.
Yeah, congratulations to Alan Federici. Really going to have a real dilemma when it comes to trying to renew his contract this summer. I don't know. Well, it's going to come both down to both club and player. Sounds obvious, but it will. I mean, does Federici test the water, or because he's probably going to have to take a pay cut to stay at Reading?
Yeah, I suppose it depends. He's prepared to give him what he wants.
Yeah. Anyway, watch this space. Right, that just wraps about news bites. Let's move on to Pub Chat,
the Tarlhurst End podcast
by Reading fans for Reading fans.
Right, welcome back to Pub Chat. Tease this a little bit earlier, but. Today's topic of discussion in Pub Chat is, when do you give up on a player's potential? So at what point do you say, I had high hopes for this bloke, but actually, it's probably not going to get any better. And the man who inspired this debate for me is Nick Blackman. Now, I'll preface this by saying, I've got nothing against Nick Blackman. Seems a lovely guy. Scored a few decent goals in his time here. Seems to work hard. Never had a bad word about him. But he's been here over 2 years now. And I've not seen significant improvement. I've not said, do you know what, Nick Blackman's so much better than he was when he arrived from Sheffield United 2 years ago. Yes, he's had the odd good game, but he's had quite a few stinkers. And there's rarely been a time when I've thought, Nick Blackman needs to be in this starting lineup week in, week out. He needs to be part of the team going forward and building. He's, what, 25, 26 now? Mm. He's had 2 years. At what point do you give up on a player? Is it an age thing? Is it a number of games thing? Gentlemen, I'll open the floor. Westy, you've been known to get off the bandwagon on certain players.
Yeah, definitely. When do you give up? I think in football in general, I don't know if it's just me speaking for myself here, I never give up. Even though in my own brain I'm thinking, they're not playing well. Every time a Saturday comes, I think they'll win today. I've always got that bit of hope. And I'm like that with players as well. I think, especially players like Nick Blackburn, your Robson Kanus, because you've seen them do little glimpses, you think, if you can just put it together, then you can develop into a good footballer. But, a bit like you, Blackman hasn't done anything more than he did when he started with us, and he never nails down a place, does he?
Johnny, the other big example for me was Simon Church. Now, we all remember Simon Church bursting onto the scene under the early days of Brian McDermott. Scored, what, 10 goals in the Championship, including some lovely strikes, and then just never kicked on. And now he's, you know, he's nowhere for chance. He's had some injuries and... Again, he's just a player that achieved a lot. I remember getting rave reviews for Wales under-21s as well. And a real, obviously, Steve Coppell threw him into that playoff semi-final against Burnley and just fizzled out. Again, how about you? I mean, where do you get off the bandwagon on certain players?
I think it's difficult. And the example, the thing I'd say about Nick Blackman is he's a striker. And he is being forced to play out on that left wing. And you saw, especially in the Leeds game, whenever he got the ball on that left wing, he was driving towards goal. He wasn't thinking, I'm going to put a cross in. He was thinking, I'm going to have a shot. Because, as I say, he is a striker. So he's constantly looking towards goal, trying to create an opportunity for himself. And there was that one where he had a shot with his right foot. I think it went out for a throw-in. And yeah, exactly. But, you sort of see that in him. And it's like I said with Simon Cox, he's a striker. So he wants to try and score goals. So he is going to try the audacious, the spectacular. And he has scored some spectacular goals. And I'm still just about in the positive camp with Nick Blackman, because I think he is a player who tries to make things happen. There are times when he tries too much. I remember earlier in the season we were speaking about, we had a free kick 40 yards out in the last minute and Blackman decided that he wanted to have a shot.
Yeah.
Which, if it goes in, you're going to be a hero from now until the end of time. But it had absolutely no chance.
Chances are.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, he wants to be that hero. He wants to... And I think you brought up a piece on Twitter, possibly, or online as well, about... the two unfortunates, and they wrote a piece about Nick
Blackman. Sheffield United fan talking about him.
I think, you know, it's clearly something that has been part of his makeup since he was a youth player, and for the last few years, he is quite a selfish player. So I think, you know, you just sort of have to ride that. I do think he can score goals, and I do think he can develop into a decent player, but I'm still slightly
at 25, 26. So has he got that much developing to do after a couple of hundred games?
And yeah, and this is where you get to the negatives, in that he is a bit of a selfish player, and you think perhaps at this stage you can't coach that selfishness out of him. If he was 21, 22, you could teach him to be more of a team player, but it is getting towards that stage where you think...
Well, this is it, Dave. I mean, Shane Long is probably an example of why you stick with a player, because I remember him getting a hell of a lot of stick.
Even into his
last season, where he ended the season with 25 goals and basically single-handedly dragging Reading to Wembley, he was getting booed by a lot of fans in the first half of that season.
He certainly was. I certainly and remember then a performance against Doncaster, wasn't it, which we eventually ended up winning 4-3, but we were 3-0 down and he was subbed. I don't think you can really you can't have any rules, hard and fast rules for two different players. You know, you've got to base it on the player. Are they improving for a start? If they stagnate and they stagnate for too long or plateau for too long, then you've got to start thinking about shifting them on. It's an incredibly difficult one, isn't it? But you've got to look at it player for player. Nick Blackman hasn't really set the world alight at Reading. We paid over £1 million for him, for God's sake.
It wasn't cheap.
Our most expensive striker of all time, I think.
I mean, 2 years at the age of 26, yeah, you've got to be thinking he's not going to do it. But if there is something there that you're just thinking, like we knew with Shane Long. When we signed Shane Long from Cork City with Kevin Doyle, Cork City was saying that Long was actually the player who had more potential. I'm kind of rambling here a bit, aren't I?
He was very raw to the game, wasn't he? Because he'd come in quite late. I think he was hurling. And he was almost a bit of a throw-in to the deal.
We bought him at 18, didn't we? Yeah. It was mainly the pace that you know was his main asset. But, I mean, we sort of say that, but I never saw that sort of improvement coming from Shane Long. I never saw those moments.
No, and it came out of nowhere, didn't it, really?
Whereas I think with players like Nick Blackman and like Hal Robson-Kanu, you've at least seen those moments over the last couple of years that you think, okay, if you can put those performances in consistently, you can be a brilliant player. Whereas Shane Long, that 25-goal season, for me, came out of absolutely nowhere. Yes, Coppell brought him in a couple of times and he outpaced a couple of defenders, scored a couple of goals. And you remember at Derby when we won 5-0 to seal the title, mm-hmm. he scored two goals on that day. But I never saw Shane Long becoming a 25-goal-a-season striker. I never saw him
go for eight-figure transfer fees.
Yeah, yes. with that consistency.
It's an interesting one, though. I, just after McDermott took over, I was at a fans forum, and the question was posed then, because Shane Long had just started finding some form at the back end of 09-10. And McDermott said that when he came in, he looked at Shane Long's stats, and he was spending somewhere in the region of 5 and 8% of a game in the penalty area. And he just turned around to Shane and said, get yourself in the penalty area, you'll start scoring goals. And in that second half of the season, he scored 10, 11, 12 goals, something like that. And he was spending in the region of 20, 25% in the penalty area. Sometimes it's just something simple like that that can set a player off. A lot of it can be down to coaching. A lot of it can be down to just little bits of advice, the sort of things that you see, sort of things that you hear that you think might improve, and sometimes it doesn't. Ultimately, it's in a manager's hands, isn't it? He's the one who's going to make the ultimate judgment.
It's playing someone to their strengths as well, because Shane Long was unplayable because he was so quick and he was good in the air. But a player that always comes to mind when we talk about these sort of things is Nicky Forster. Nicky Forster, when he used to play up front with someone, the fans used to get on his back because he used to get caught offside a lot. He used to be greedy on the ball. And then all of a sudden, he played up front one season on his own for Pardew and he absolutely terrorised the whole league. And he became a great player almost seemingly overnight. Because he already had the pace, he had the attributes, a bit like Blackman, and he had something about him. Mm. He was raw, and he was a little bit greedy, but he was good. And that year he played at front of his own, when he didn't have to worry about playing over players, and he just could be greedy, get on people's shoulders.
And that's exactly why Pardew played Rouget up front with him, because he knew that he could shoot, because if he played with Rouget, he wouldn't score.
But he did, you know, that's the sort of player talk about. Out of nowhere, he was on the bench a lot. I think Butler and Curran were up front, and he used to come off the bench. I mean, famously, the Wigan game, when he came on and terrorised them, and ended up going to Wembley. But once he went up front on his own, he played to his strengths, and he didn't have to play other people in, he'd become a great player overnight.
In which case, would you advocate giving Blackman a run up front? Or again, has it got to the point where you've not seen enough?
Well, Blackman hasn't done enough to earn his place up front, has he? And now you've got your Coop and Pogrebny out putting in performances, he's not going to either.
Put it this way, if you're Steve Clarke this summer, someone phones you up with a bid, 400, 500 grand for Nick Blackman, are you taking it?
if you can get another left winger, yes. But I think
he's not a left winger, though, is he?
Well, no, exactly. That's what I'm saying. He's not a left winger, but we're playing him on the left wing. Yeah. And who else do you put out on that left wing? Hal Robson-Kanu, again, another very inconsistent player. Jamie Mackie, we've talked about him, next to zero production. Simon Cox, a striker, another striker. There aren't that many options within the squad, and you are going to be putting a square peg in a round hole on the left wing most of the time.
The next question is, can you replace Nick Blackman for 500,000?
Don't know, Yakubu was free. He's already scored as many goals in open players.
Yeah, but he's at the back end of his career. I mean, there's long-term moving forward prospects. Are you going to replace him for 500,000? Probably not.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, it's a bit of a I can't even remember the word. It's a question that's got no real answer, because like Dave said, it's an individual case. You can't just say, oh, player turns 26, he's gone, or he's played 100 games, he's gone.
But the other thing is, £1 million gets you Nick Blackman, you know. So, unless you're going to spend 5 million, you probably ain't going to get a lot better.
Yeah, as I say, we'll wait and see. I'm just disappointed, because it is tough, and it's the toughest thing as a football fan for me, when you've seen a player who, like you've said, you've seen glimpses of it, and then you just think, he's just not done it enough, and you have to give up.
And as I said, with Nick Blackman and with Harry Robson-Kanu, when you're in a fan's bad books, it's very difficult to overturn that again. Harry Robson-Kanu could have 5 man of the match performances over the next 5 games, and still there'd be a fan in the back of his mind saying, oh yeah, but when's he going to turn in another bad one?
Yeah. Whereas Gareth McCleary can have 5 bad ones and no one remembers it, because he did one good thing and everything, he's back to his best.
Anyway, let us know your thoughts on the issue. How long do you give a player? Do you stick with them till the very day they're sold, or do you come to a point and say, you know what, I'm off this bandwagon? Let us know. You can tweet into @thetarlestend or use our Facebook page, facebook.com/tarlestend, or send us an email to thetarlestend@gmail.com, as these next people have done.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
@thetarlestend
and facebook.com/thetarlestend.
Right, welcome to the mailbag. Apologies for Dave's coughing there. He was choking on the thought of us selling Nick Blackman. But he's all right now. He's calmed himself down. He's ready to go.
Pretty much out on a derby yesterday.
Yeah, very much so.
At Nick Blackman.
Right. Wasn't it Derby where Nick Blackman gave it the big
It was, yes.
Yeah. Well, he scored the penalty, didn't he?
Last minute breakaway. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Give the silence.
Classic.
Silent treatment.
Right. Emails and tweets. Thanks very much, those of you who have got in touch this week. Very much appreciated, as always. We've had a few people getting on the FA Cup bandwagon. Ben Prince says, FA Cup winners, then Europa League champions, then Champions League winners, then World Club champions. Realistic? Question mark. Of course. Why not?
Let's dream.
We just need someone to come in and throw about $2-3 billion at the club, and that's absolutely doable. Jamie Hodder, come on then. Can we win it? FA Cup. In one word, yes or no? Well, of course, yes, we can win it. Do you see any scenario that Reading win the FA Cup this year?
A bit of luck, maybe.
Ask that to a Wigan fan.
Yeah, that's all right.
We were a Premier League side at the time, though.
Was it Portsmouth and Cardiff as well in 2008?
No,
Millwall.
I mean, we're talking, what, a good 30, 40 years since a second-tier side has won the cup?
Mm. Yeah, again, there's a lot of big clubs out. And it depends how the draw goes. We spoke about earlier. If Arsenal get Liverpool, Man United get Villa, and Villa turn them over, and one of Liverpool and Arsenal go out again, you never know.
Yeah, and Jack Bond has said, what would you prefer now? A big ties bring faith to club or an easier-to-beat team?
No, I think, as we said, once you get to this stage and you're 90 minutes away from Wembley, I mean, it's kind of a disappointment that the semi-finals are at Wembley as well, because you want the big day to be Wembley. But, you know, a trip to Wembley is, what, one game in perhaps 3 or 4 or 5 that you can possibly have as a championship side per season. You definitely want it.
Yeah, well, we've not made it since 1927, so it'd be nice to set that record straight. Well,
the FA Cup, yes, Wembley. We've erased that memory, so...
And Ewan Cunningham says, dream quarter-final draw... Again, Man United or Arsenal away or at home, or a team we can realistically beat. I think we've covered that one. As with Johnny Ware, who says, who do you want in the next round?
I think the thing is, this year in the FA Cup, technically you can realistically beat anyone. Bradford have. You know, there's some clubs that have turned big sides over.
Yeah, MK Dons smashed United 4-0 earlier this season.
I mean, Bradford beat Sunderland today. This one's playing on Sunday. I wasn't thinking, that's a shock.
Anything can
happen. I thought Bradford are giant killers already.
Yeah, amongst Bradford beating Chelsea, obviously many people forgot that Middlesbrough actually beat Man City.
Yeah.
Well, we can dare to dream as long as the semi-finals on a Sunday. Can't make that any more clear, FA. As long as the FA Cup draw is on a Sunday. I will. I've got a direct line, obviously. We're from the famous Tarlhurst end. 50 podcasts. Got massive weight behind us. Right. Moving on to some more general tweets. Joey Davey, regular tweeter in. Thanks for getting in touch again, Joe. He says, why do you think Clark has got more out of the players so far than Adkins? Westy?
Personality.
Simple as that?
Yeah, I think so.
Johnny?
I think once you lose faith in a manager, it's very difficult to motivate yourself. And as we've said many times, we've been here a year and a half, and the players still didn't really look like they were comfortable in what they were doing. Whereas Steve Clark has said, keep it simple, stupid.
Keep it simple.
Dave?
Better tactician. I think he's worked under some magnificent managers, hasn't he? As much as it pains me to say it, he has worked under Jose Mourinho. Nigel Adkins won the Welsh League with Bangor City.
It was good to see Nigel Adkins on Twitter congratulating Reading on getting to the quarterfinal.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Was it a positive tweet, Johnny?
The Nigel Adkins.
Mm. It was always going to be positive.
Of course it was positive. Because the positivity
of being positive is truly positive.
It's so positive.
Absolutely. Right. Cam Baker. Should Kelly keep his place even when Gunter returns to fitness? And on that note, Anthony Kendrick says, how much better have we looked with Sir Stephen Kelly at right back? What role does a fully fit Gunter play from here? So, Westy, this question has to be directed at you. Stephen Kelly.
Let's wait there. I think everyone was in agreement that Gunter was playing much better until he got injured.
Even one of his biggest critics, Mr. Dave Harris.
He was.
So, I think people got short memories here.
No.
I'm speaking about myself. But no, I think you can't change a winning side, and as long as they're winning, then everyone should keep their place.
Is there any inkling for you guys, any desire now to see Stephen Kelly get a new contract?
No.
Probably not on the wages that he's on. No. You'd imagine Premier League contract, Premier League wages. 31, 32.
Yeah.
If you can bring him back for less, then absolutely. Because I think he can still do a job at this level. But
he's a squad player, though, isn't he? And we got rid of Sean Cummings. And who else have we got to play right back apart from him? Is it Niall Keown who plays there?
Yeah. The thing is, it depends. I mean, Stephen Kelly, he's had a lot of injuries. He doesn't nail down a place anywhere he goes. I spoke about this before. So why are you going to give him a big contract when you can get another right back?
But we've just said, if Stephen Kelly keeps up the performances, there's no reason for Chris Gunter to walk back into the side.
No, there isn't, but you ain't going to pay two players big wages when you've had two league years in the Championship, have you? And Stephen Kelly, again, he doesn't nail down a place.
Yeah, and the thing about it is that the more Stephen Kelly plays well, the more he's going to fancy his chances, and clubs are going to look at him saying, I want this guy to be our first choice right back.
That's right.
So, again, almost him playing well lessens the chance for him staying at the club.
Yeah. I honestly don't think he's going to get as good a deal as he's got here elsewhere.
No.
Given the fact that he's not barely played, but he hasn't held down a place here at Reading for 2.5 years. So if he goes elsewhere, he's still going to take a pay cut.
Yeah.
Well, I'd certainly not be against offering him something. Obviously, again, it's got to be a club favourable deal. But yeah, it's not a cut and dry, see you later. I think he's done more than enough. In the 3 years, he's a bit like Andy Griffin.
I think he should be at least offered a deal. But of course, it's not going to be on the same terms as what he's on at the moment.
Absolutely not. Right, moving on. Keith says, "What do you think is Reading's best attack? Is it two or three up top?" Obviously, we've seen a little bit of experimenting from Clark with three midfielders and three forwards.
I think the last week has answered that question quite nicely, don't you? Two up front, up at Derby, won both games. Three up front against Leeds, lost it, didn't even score.
No, if you play three up front, you're very much dependent on them wingers doing a job that they clearly haven't done so far. So I think just keep it simple.
The three up front, Pogrebniak was horribly isolated, working the wrong areas of the pitch completely.
That's right, and then he ended coming up wide anyway to get the ball. You don't want him there.
What about, though, a trio of Cox, Pogrebniak and Kubu?
Well, that's one of those desperate last 10 minutes.
Yeah, that is when you launch it long, isn't it? Let's play, you play off Pogrebniak, don't you?
Right, moving on. Ollie says, what player do you think has improved the most under the Clark regime? Quite a few contenders for this one.
Chris Gunter.
Westy?
Yeah, we spoke about this, didn't we, earlier. I think Danny Williams has been good recently.
I can tell you stats-wise, two of the players that have improved the most, I mean, we take off Gareth McCleary because he didn't really play too much this season. Danny Williams has gone up by about 1.3 marks. You've got Chris Gunter, who has gone up by, again, about 1.2 marks. And Pavel Pogrebniak obviously had a miraculous turnaround. He's improved by more than 2 points out of 10.
Mm. I think that's more to do with attitude than...
Yeah.
Than
We saw it when Atkins came in as well. You know, he sort of put his arm around Pog and said, you know, give it all you got, and it worked for a while. We'll have to see if Pog drops off.
Yeah.
The two players that I would say is Pogrebniak, as we've seen, a lot more motivated, maybe just likes to win some months. I think you said he scored a lot of goals in January.
Does tend to have a good time. It must be cold. It must be the Russian, isn't it?
Sorry, go on, John.
Yeah. And the other player is Michael Hector, who I've been a critic of him on recent podcasts, saying he's not mature. And Clark, aside from that moment against Leeds where he tried to take on three men on the halfway line and we conceded the second goal, I think aside from that moment, he's been a lot more mature and a lot more like a centre-back rather than David Luiz.
Yeah, and I'll throw some praise in for Alex Pearce as well. I think he's looked a lot more assured.
I think you can make a case for the whole defence, can't you? A lot definitely. Of that is all to do with setup, isn't it? Really?
Except for maybe Jordan
earlier with Clark being a better tactician.
Yeah, except for maybe Jordan Abita, who's still not.
Last couple of games, he's looked quite shaky. Really.
Yeah, it's set pieces as well against Leeds.
I mean, I think the mentality, especially if we go back to the Leeds game, especially. The mentality between Hector and Abita, where it used to be Jordan Abita was very confident and Hector was almost overconfident, and it seems to have swapped over. There was a couple of times that Jordan Abita sort of turned into danger and gave the ball away against Leeds. He seems to have...
I'm not too worried about
Abita. No, he's a very young player, isn't he?
You see this all the time with young players. They have a storming start. I mean, Abita was superb last season.
He was good.
He's plateaued a bit. The errors are starting to manifest themselves, but you know, it takes a manager to put their arm around him and do the right thing, and help him get back to the way he was.
But also, scouts have got more of an idea of what he's about because they've now got basically a full season of Jordan Abita at left back to instruct wingers and forwards about saying, look, this is what he's good at. Last year it was very much an unknown factor. This year it's like, this guy can do this. It's like showing a baseball analogy. You go through the league once as a pitcher, no one's seen your stuff. Go through the second time, third time.
They know what's coming.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So you move on. Anyway, that's the first time I've thrown a baseball reference into the show. Mark that down on your 50-episode bingo.
Arizona? Is it Arizona you
support? Yeah, go Diamondbacks. Indeed.
I like the fact he said he threw it in as well, which was good.
Here we go. Right, Jeff Hallett. Why does Hal Robson-Kanu get so much stick when Blackman is arguably worse? Lack of end product, less of a team player. I think we've covered...
It's because, exactly. We've covered it. It's that consistency level. They've shown it, but not enough.
Yeah, and they get stick because you see they can do it as well.
Yeah, and we'll finish with Phil, who's this was sent in after the Leeds game. He says, Reading FC fans are horrible to follow on Twitter. If they win, everyone loves it. If they lose, it's all doom and gloom. New manager, new system. Give it time. Don't be slating the players every time they lose.
I mean, I've got to admit, I was on the Tyler Send Twitter after the Leeds game. I think I said it was woeful. And it was. It was absolutely woeful. But it was the inconsistency that was the most frustrating thing. Because we'd just gone up to Wolves and won there. We'd just put in arguably our most complete home performance of the season against Sheffield Wednesday. Leeds come to town and you think this is an eminently winnable game. And it was just nothing. Absolutely nothing. That was the most frustrating thing about it.
Westy, should it be a case of you've got nothing nice to say, say nothing at all?
If only. I wouldn't have had a show if that would have been the case. But I think, again, when you react after a football match, you react out of the fact that you're frustrated and annoyed. And then when you sit down and be a bit more pragmatic about things, you say something different.
Well, yeah. Five minutes
this
later,
show would be so much different if we recorded right after the final whistle.
Because you probably had about four beers in you as well.
I walked to the bus. That was absolutely atrocious.
Yeah.
Can you imagine recording after the Birmingham game?
But I honestly think that is most football fans in the world. We got a mate at work and he's always on suicide watch when Arsenal get beat. And then the next week he's all happy as Larry. So it's just football fans in general. I think they will react.
And it's what we again, what we love about the game, isn't it? The fact that you get passionate and you care. Yep. Otherwise, you know, you wouldn't be listening to this show.
And everyone
please
should know,
keep listening to this show.
Subscribe on iTunes as well.
Yeah, subscribe on iTunes.
Everyone should know about Reading nowadays. Just when you think they've given you that little bit of extra, they always drag it away.
We are spoilt as a fan base, and I'm going to say this now: every single season now for the last 15 years, Reading have had something to play for.
Yeah. Mm.
Promotions, relegations, FA Cup runs, even this season, which I tweeted a couple of weeks ago. I thought this is going to be the most boring Reading season we've ever had.
I said a couple of weeks ago, more chance of winning the FA Cup than getting promoted.
Yeah, and I'll say that now. We're spoiled. We've been really lucky as a fan base. I mean, you think of some other fan bases up and down the country that have known pretty much misery or mediocrity.
Hello, Rochdale.
Yeah. Hi, guys.
Who's that?
Yeah, exactly. throw all these teams under the bus we don't like. Walsall.
Yeah.
Rotherham.
Yes, they can.
Yeah. So, you know, we've been very fortunate as fans. And again, just when you thought this season was going to die a death, there's an FA Cup run to the quarterfinals to hang on to. So keep the faith, guys. It's what makes it interesting. Mm-hmm. And that just about wraps up the mailbag. So thanks very much to those of you who got in touch. As Johnny mentioned, do subscribe to us on iTunes. It helps out. If you leave us a little 5-star rating, it makes our day.
Because no one likes Sport Lobster. Is it Sport Lobster?
I don't know.
On the Facebook, you said there was listening on the Facebook to Sport Lobster.
I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
Oh. Okay.
That
was in the last podcast.
Oh, Sport Lobster.
I'll cut this out.
No, don't cut it out. No,
just leave it in. Okay, it's gold. Right. This is the sort of thing after 50 episodes you should be expecting by now.
It sounds somewhat dodgy, like you were actually promoting Sports Lobster.
Yeah. That sound you can hear is Johnny's bank balance going up. Anyway, on that note, time to move on to any other business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Any other business.
Right, welcome back to Any Other Business. Time for our second correction of the show.
Yep, never mind.
This time, Johnny Williams has gone back to negative, as Sport Lobster was apparently the football ramble.
Yeah, very close. I can see where the mistake was.
Lobsters, ramblers.
I've just got lobsters on the brain.
Football is a sport. Lobster on the brain. He's had his birthday weekend. It's been Ascot on the lobster.
That's it.
Champagne.
Lobster, caviar, champagne, yeah.
That's
the high-flying life.
It can only be that.
Of Johnny Williams. Right, anyway, time to wrap this show up with a couple of previews. Two games to look forward to. Wigan at home on Tuesday night.
The Big One at Wigan. I bet you hear that at some point.
Patented. Followed by a trip to high-flying Ipswich. We'll start with the Wigan game then. A team that, you know, I had a chat with Charles on the podcast section on Friday. Hands up who thought Wigan would be second from bottom and what good 10 points from safety. If not more, I think it's 12.
And sell all the best players.
Who thought this would happen at the start of the season? Because for me, they were the team of the second half of last season. If they hadn't had those cup runs, I think they would have gone up. I think they just ran out of steam. But now,
you've seen what cup runs do to those sorts of teams.
23 points all season.
You look at Hull this season as well. When you have that Europa League run, you got to build a squad for the Europa League, and then you just can't sustain it in the next season if you drop down to the Championship as well. It's very, very difficult to sustain that when you're not a top 6 or 7 club that is constantly in Europe.
I think if you look at the bottom of the Championship at the moment, if you'd have said at the start of the season, Fulham would be down there. Brighton would be down there. We're going
to
be down there.
Even Reading to a certain extent.
You've been a rich man.
I've said it so many times, I don't understand how Middlesbrough and Ipswich are up there. I think Middlesbrough have come 12th and 16th the last two seasons. Suddenly Ito Karanka comes in and they're a different team.
Yeah,
I mean, going into this game, Wigan, a team that have won twice away all season. They've only scored 12 goals. The form book usually flies out the window as soon as the team plays Reading. But it goes without saying, they are in absolutely dreadful run of form.
Malcolm Mackay's turned them around. Oh, no way.
Yeah, they've not won a home game since August. Obviously, this game at the Bedeschi Stadium, so that doesn't come as much into play. They've won twice away from home against Derby, funnily enough. It's one of their two wins, and Leeds.
Unbelievable.
But they haven't won a game in 2015.
And do you remember at the start of the season, we thought that draw was a really good result?
Yeah. Well, it's like last year. I remember we went up and got that draw with Bolton, and I thought, oh, that's a really good result.
No,
it turns out it wasn't. It's they've won once since October.
Oh, no.
Twice in 26.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Let's keep rolling out these abysmal stats.
2-0, I think.
Yeah. Well, we say this, but Wigan are a team that have been a bit of a bogey side for Reading in recent years. They won at the Medeski last season. They obviously thrashed us in that key relegation decider when Pogg got himself sent off. We were 3-0 down in the first half, I think. A team that Reading really do struggle in previous years because they've been a passing side. And those are the teams that Reading team haven't done well against, is the pure passing side.
Or been able to become
one. We just beat Derby, so.
Yeah, but second string side maybe. But anyway.
Previously.
So, gents, all signs point to a win.
Oh, no.
But this can't be the case. But don't worry, because on the podcast extra, I've already ensured that our jinx doesn't strike because I predicted a 1-1 draw.
Oh, good.
Charles Watson's gone for a 2-0 Reading win. What say you two? And Dave, we'll get Dave as well.
But I'm going to go for a 3-0 Reading win.
Right, well, I'll go 1-0.
This is the game that finally all comes together for us.
So, Johnny Williams is going 3-0. Westy?
1-0 Reading.
I've been saying for two seasons, this is the game that's finally going to come together.
Dave, will log your prediction as well.
Yeah, I'll just remembering back, I've had two predictions so far, haven't I? And I've predicted both games to win 3-1. And they both ended up 0-0. So, let's go 3-1. I'm going to get it right at some point.
0-0 then.
Right. And then moving on to Ipswich away. Obviously a team that are going great guns. Mick McCarthy's working his usual championship magic under the plenty of former Royals to score against him. Reserves.
Yeah.
Noel Hunt was stretched off in the last minute of their game at the weekend, so he's going to have a scan on Monday. So he might not be involved. If he is, I'm sure he'll score. With Jay Tab and his brother Stephen there as well.
That's three goals for them already, because exactly. they've all got a score.
Portman Road, not a place Reading have done particularly well at in recent years either. Dave, can you see any joy for Reading in this one?
Potentially. You say we haven't had much in the way of luck. I mean, we lost 2-0 there last season, but...
Seems to remember Matt Mills getting sent off there in a 2-1 defeat.
We won two of the last three there. We absolutely annihilated them in 10-11, 3-1. We won with the two last-minute goals in 11-12, didn't we?
So, oh, yeah.
There's potential there, but I'll be happy with a point. I think we'll go there, we'll do our usual counter-attack, hit him on the break. I think we'll certainly score there. So let's go 2-2. Bit of the old Desmond.
2-2. It's coming up as a date, but I'll change that. Right, Westy.
I was actually going to say 2-0 as well, so I think I'll stick with that.
2-2. Johnny?
Yeah, I think as Dave says, it's an inconsistent side. This is a Reading team that could conceivably lose at home to Wigan and then go and win away at Ipswich, win both games, lose both games. You don't know what's going to happen. I think we'll go down 3-1, but I hope we don't, and I certainly don't necessarily think that is set in stone. I think we could go up there and win or draw.
just to narrow that down there. I'll say we'll get beat 2-0.
We're going to add that I correctly predicted an away
you
win.
Did. The out of the two previous games, the only man to correctly get a score or a result right was Westy, who said we'd lose. we'd win at Wolves. We'd win at Wolves, and we did. Charles Watt's very unhappy that Reading scored a winner to blow his 1-1 prediction out of the water. But yeah, so the predictions league standings, I'm still top on 19, Johnny's on 18, Charles is on 12, and Westy is on 11.
I'm going to win this.
You're going to win this?
I'm winning it.
You heard it here first. Right, that just about wraps up this very show. Plenty of content up on thetarlhurstend.com. Go check it out. We've got some stats reviews, plenty of preview material going up. With two games a week, it's obviously coming thick and fast. Also, on the Tarlhurstend front, I've ordered some mugs, gents.
No.
Not just our faces, yeah.
Yeah.
There are some Tarlhurstend mugs. There is some merch coming out.
They are unprofessional jokes of mugs.
Yeah, that is what is written on the mug. An unprofessional joke of a mug.
I like it. It's good.
So we'll have details of how you can pick up one of those in the next couple of weeks. I just need to figure out how much postage is going to cost to send them. And we're also going to give one away in a competition.
Oh.
So if you've got an idea for a competition, by the way.
Up for the cup, we call it.
Oh, here you go.
It's a step down from the Savile Rogue scarves.
Yeah.
What do you mean? This is high-quality mug. High-quality mug. The patented Tarlhurstend catchphrase. So yeah, stay tuned for that. Dave, thanks very much for joining us.
No problem at all.
I'll be chatting to Charles Watts on Friday for the podcast extra. As for when we'll be back, I don't know. I'm not going to make any wild predictions. Maybe we're done. Maybe we just call it a day at 50.
Leave it there.
And ride into the sunset.
50 not out, yeah.
50 not out. But in all seriousness, we'll probably be back on Sunday or Monday night.
The question is, when do you give up on the potential of a decent podcast?
If you've made it to 50, you've done very, very well. I was going to quickly listen to episode 1 and play some of the highlights, but I can't find it anywhere.
No.
It's lost to the archives.
Lost to the ether.
Indeed. Anyway, I said thank you very much if you've listened to 1 or 50 podcasts or anything in between. Very much appreciated. We'll be back next week and hopefully talking about a great FA Cup draw and 6 points as well. So come on, you arse. It's funny how the crowd's always be betrayed.